Our chairman is on the way. It seems he'll be back. He'll be here in a few minutes. May I just make a very brief introduction of my colleagues? I'll start from Honourable Frederick Atsopardi, who's from the opposition side, Honourable Tony Fenech, also from the opposition side, and Honourable Charles Buhajar from the government side, the Honourable Minister Edward Cicluna, Minister for Finance, from also obviously from the government side, and also John Vella, you know, and who are staff of the Parliament. I'll leave the formal introduction to the chairman when he comes, so this is just very informal. But may I take this opportunity to welcome you all to our Parliament. I saw you were seeing our question time, one of our most interesting or more interesting ministers was answering. And hope you enjoy your stay till now to Malta, enjoy what's left of it, and we're here to listen to your views and exchange whatever opinions you would like us to. Please feel free. I invite either any one of my colleagues, or shall I leave the word to you first, and then we can take it up from there. Yes, if you like.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm going to allow my colleagues to introduce themselves, but I'll tell you a little bit about who we are. We're members of the Canada-Europe Parliamentary Association, which is an all-party association. We are all from different parties, but we try to be nonpartisan when we come to Europe. As I said, it's called the Canada-Europe Parliamentary Association. We come anywhere between 2 and 4 times a year to the Council of Europe in Strasbourg. We're official observers. We're allowed to participate in the sessions, generally speaking, and in the committees. It's quite a pleasure to do that. And we try to get involved on issues that affect Canada. In turn, we entertain representatives, MEPs from Europe who come to Canada. Same thing. We talk about issues that affect Canada and Europe, and there seem to be more and more of them. So at the same time, we also attend the country, the state, that is the president, the incoming president of the European Union. We have been to, of course, recently Slovakia, we've been to Luxembourg, we've been to The Hague, and of course here we are in Malta. And I must say, with the issues that are going on in Europe, you have a challenging time ahead of you with your chairing the meetings ahead and being involved in the agenda. The issues are.
Good evening.
Good evening. I'm well. So I'm just telling Mr. Chairman a little bit about what we are. I won't repeat it. But I will. I'm just about to say that Malta is about to embark on a six-month period, which will be extremely challenging. And we've observed the chairs from the other member states that have chaired the European Union, and it's now your turn. And I wish you well, because you've happened to be come across the time that's perhaps the most difficult time for Europe, what with Brexit and the economy and the migration issue. They're just amazingly complicated issues. So that's why we happen to be here in Malta. We've met with your speaker on Monday and had an interesting time with him. We have met with a think tank person and talked about European issues that involve Malta. We have talked last night with a fellow who actually is a Canadian, And we discussed the complicated issues of migration. And it is more and more complicated. It's always been on the agenda ever since I've been coming, and I've been coming to Europe for many years. And migration is perhaps the most complicated of all the issues. So my name is David Tilson. I'm the acting head of the delegation. The president of our association, who is from Newfoundland, was in Strasbourg. He had to go back. It's interesting when we start talking about climate change, because it may be because of climate change that he returned. He is from Newfoundland, where it's been terribly dry, and a hurricane came up from the Caribbean and all the way up the eastern coast of the United States and into the Maritimes. And bridges have been taken out. It's
Hurricane
quite,
Matthew.
It's Matthew. So that's where he went back to his writing to view the destruction. So I'm going to let my colleagues. Oh, and also with us, of course, is Mr. DiMaggio, who's our honorary counsel, who has been with us throughout our sessions here. He's at the end of the table, I think. Do you want to say a few words, sir?
No.
Thank you very much. So we'll start with Senator Down.
Thank you. I'm Senator Down. I'm from the East Coast of Canada. I'm a member of the Senate Liberal Caucus, and I'm vice chair of the Senate Foreign Affairs and International Trade Committee.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Senator David Wells. I'm from Newfoundland. I represent the Conservative Party in the Senate of Canada. I'm also from an island nation, former colony of the United Kingdom, with about 500,000 people. So there may be some similarities, absolutely. I'm also, just wanted to mention, I'm chair of the Estimates Committee. I'm deputy opposition whip, and I'm also deputy chair of the Canada-US Interparliamentary Association.
Okay.
My name is Don Davies.
My name is Don Davies. I'm a member of parliament from Vancouver in the province of British Columbia on the west coast of Canada. I'm with the New Democratic Party, which is the Social Democrat Party in Canada, and I'm vice chair of the House of Commons Standing Committee on Health.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
So, the issue, and I await what issues you wish to discuss, but our issues have been, of course, we're interested in migration. We're interested in, I happen to be vice chair of the Standing Committee on Immigration in Parliament, and of course we've just finished a study on the Syrian crisis. Mm-hmm. The government has brought over 25,000-30,000 Syrians since last November, and so we studied the effects of that in Canada. In fact, I'm absent from the committee, but the committee is, as we speak, presenting its report, which will ultimately go to Parliament. We're obviously interested in Brexit. We've had many discussions here and in Strasbourg. And I might add, we also met with a delegation from from Malta in Strasbourg to discuss these issues. And finally, our main principal interest is the topic of CETA, the trade agreement that's proceeding with Europe. It's been under negotiation for a number of years. The negotiations have ended, and it's now down to voting. And as you know, Belgium has come out with a surprising vote, which we'll see where that leads. So we hope it passes, and so we'd be prepared to talk to you about, listen to your views on that. We've got the impression that Malta supports CETA. There'll be the removal of tariffs. It's a very complicated agreement, but I think as far as trade is concerned, as far as the economy is concerned, it will help the economy of both Canada and Malta. So those are the principal issues. And, of course, there's the issue of climate change. We could talk about that as well.
Well,
Thank you very much. Well, first of all, I would like to, I don't know if the introductions has been made already from our side, so I would like to introduce my fellow colleagues, members of Parliament, on my right-hand side, Dr. Michael Falzon, who kindly substituted me until I arrived as a part of the government. Professor Edward Scicluna, the current Minister of Finance, yesterday had an arduous feat of proposing the budget and our estimates. Architect Charles Bohajas, also a Member of Parliament from the government side. Ex-Minister for Finance, Tonio Fenech, from the opposition. Frederick Azzopardi, from the opposition as well. Dr. Franco Mercia, from a Member of Parliament from the government side. Mr. Tillerson, I would like to start off something which somewhat draws the people of Malta and Canada closer together, even though they are very far apart geographically. And that is the Maltese community that is actually living in Canada. Although the 1991 census recorded 15,525 individuals who gave their single ethnic origin as Maltese and an additional 10,040 who designated themselves of multiple origin, it is estimated that the Maltese community in Canada amounts to around 50,000 people, with the largest community being in Toronto. And I understand that you, Mr. David Tristan, you hail from that area. So you might have plenty of Maltese votes there.
Well, and I understood the population was more like 150,000, but I could be
second generation.
And I will say my daughter, her spouse is, he says he's Maltese, but his parents came from Malta, and he always takes great delight in providing Maltese food when I arrive at his house. So, and has told me when he was quite pleased. He's never been to Malta, but he takes great pride in his descendant, as being a descendant from Malta, and his parents, as I say, came. So I think I guess that's really all I can say. Some of my colleagues might want to add to that. But that's a sizable amount of people from Malta that live, and there's several generations. I expect some of them came over around the time of the war, after the war.
In the 50s, after the war.
Right.
The war.
But
mass migration from the Maltese Islands towards the east.
Anyway, he's a firefighter, and we're quite proud to have him in our family.
Thank you. Well, as you said, Malta will be assuming the presidency of the European Union in the first half of the next year. And in President Juncker's State of the Union address in September, a number of issues were identified that require attention. Among them, more cooperation between member states, more synergy between European institutions, the rise of populism along with high unemployment, social inequality, public debt, migration and refugee crisis, and terrorism. Now I will give a brief overview of what Malta will be proposing during its presidency at the parliamentary level. Our parliament will be involved in various interparliamentary conferences, among them that of the committees dealing with European affairs and with the common foreign and security policy and the common security and defence policy. Besides, there will be the interparliamentary conference on stability, economic coordination and governance in the European Union to be held in Brussels, together with the meetings in Malta of the Social Affairs Committees and of the Economic Affairs Committees. For example, at the COSAC plenary in May 2017, the program will consist of, among others, the transposition of EU law and its impact on member states, the role of national parliaments, with the participation of the Commission Vice President Mr. Timmermans, who was here a few weeks ago, and Brexit, since, as we all know, Prime Minister Theresa May has recently announced that the exit process will commence early in 2017. The integrated EU maritime policy, which is one of Malta's stated priority areas. And the last item would be on migration, combating human smuggling and trafficking, and establishing a humane and effective return and readmission policy. For the Interparliamentary Conference on the Common Foreign and Security Policy and the Common Security and Defence Policy, which is scheduled for April 2017, we are proposing the following themes for discussion, which are all considered important to EU, and some particularly so for the Mediterranean region. State of play of European neighbourhood policy, European response to instability and threats in the southern Mediterranean and in the Middle East, an exchange of views on the priorities and the strategies of the EU in the area of TCF, SP and CSDP, to be addressed hopefully by Federica Mogherini, High Representative. We will also have some workshops, one on migration policy, with the title, Can Flexible Solidarity Be the Solution? The second workshop will deal on the relationship between NATO and the EU after Brexit, which is going to be very interesting. And the third workshop will deal with the future of civilian CSDP missions. Climate change. It is also one of the priorities of the Maltese presidency of the Council. And it will feature high at the meeting of the chairpersons of the Economic Affairs Committees scheduled for April 2017, especially in view of the Paris Climate Agreement signed by more than 170 countries, including, of course, Malta. In this regard, the Maltese Parliament passed an act establishing a framework for climate action in July 2015. The main themes for discussion will be the negative effects of climate change on the economy, if no action is taken, and there will also be a focus on the adaptation and innovation on the part of the private sector to drive sustainable products and operations, and also the financial landscape around low-carbon investment, examining climate-specific funds and innovations in traditional financing and insurance. The meeting of the chairpersons of the Social Affairs Committees in March 2017 will discuss poverty and social exclusion. The EU has established the year 2020 as the target when 20 million people should be brought out of poverty and social exclusion. This pledge by EU leader, followed by alarming statistics showing that there were more than 120 million people at risk of poverty or social exclusion in Europe. Although there are various other topics to talk about, for the moment I stop here to let you, Mr. Tillerson, make your comments on these items that I have mentioned, and then the other members will join in with their comments and questions. I see also that our Minister of Finance, Honorable Cicluna, who is a member of the Economic and Financial Affairs Committee, is present, and he is well placed to deal with the financial matters that may arise. Mr. Tillerson, please.
Yes, we had some fascinating meetings here while we've been in Malta. One was this afternoon with some representatives from the EU on the whole topic of asylum claims, and we were thoroughly educated on what goes on in Europe. The whole issue of migration is...
Thank you very much. You'd think I'd know because the same thing happens in Ottawa, Canada. But, however, we had a fascinating discussion about asylum claims, the horrific problems we have that are going on in all the member states, and no doubt those will be part of your meetings in the 6 months that you're during the presidency. We also had an interesting meeting with a Canadian, actually, who is his name is Federico Soda, who's the director of the International Organization for Migration. We met with him last night, and he talked about how a number of years ago the issue was people coming across from Africa and Libya and other places and arriving on the soil in Greece and Italy, and the cost of those that was being put to those countries for processing people, and wanted, of course, the big issue that was being discussed in Strasbourg was the North should pay for those, help pay for those the services that were being provided by those countries. But that has all changed. That has all changed substantially, because now thousands of people are coming to Greece and to Turkey, to Italy, in literally rubber dinghies, which never make it across. And the issue is not how we're going to process them, but are these people going to live? So the whole issue of humanitarianism arises, And so, you know, you've listed a whole slew of questions and comments. I'm going to let my colleagues, we'll start off with Senator Down. He's always the most talkative of our group, and we'll let him. We'll let him.
After that introduction, I'll have to be a man of few words.
Yes. Yes.
First of all, I want to tell you how much I'm enjoying your country. I've never been here before, and it's been a wonderful surprise about how interesting and beautiful it is. I went to your outstanding war museum the other day. I've been to a number around the world, Australia and other, and that's as good as any I ever saw. It's shocking what happened to this country in the Second World War, and it would have been shocking to be here 10 years after the war, and then to look at the country today. It's an amazing success story. You must take incredible pride in that. Well, everyone got the King George's Medal, I understand, for that. That's in the presentation I saw. And the prosperity since you joined the European Union in particular must have been striking for your citizens who remained, and we understand why so many left. Many came to Canada from many countries, and all of them have been great citizens to build up our rather larger landmass than you have. Like my colleague Senator Wells, I come from an island. I come from the smallest. Canada has 10 provinces. I come from the smallest. We only have 150,000 people. We're an island as well. In fact, we have the University of Prince Edward Island received a UNESCO award with the co-shared with the University of Malta. The University of Prince Edward Island has a small island institute. We study islands all over the world. Some of your colleagues may be familiar with it. Sustainability and climate change. We have it's the lead from the University of Malta, who was at the university in Charlottetown when I went to the announcement of the UNESCO award. And it's quite significant. It's the first one in that eastern part of Canada we ever received. Dr. Godfrey
Baldacchino.
Yes, exactly. He was there. And so there's great cooperation between the province I'm from and the university in your country. The sustainability and the climate change part coming from a small island, and we joke, but I tell people it's not funny, our future name may be Prince Edward Islands, because when the water rises, we're supposed to have three land masses instead of the one we have now joined. What we can do on climate change, what adaptions we have to take early. We have tremendous, unlike you, we don't have the rock. We have tremendous soil erosion, coastline disappearing. So why are we allowing people to build buildings close to the water? Because they want the water view when the water rises. What will that mean? What does it mean for crops? What does it mean for water supply and others? This is really long-term planning. It's very hard for governments to do because most of us are focused on the next election and how that campaign will go. But I'm just curious. We're no model to the world. We're behind where we should be. But at least we're thinking about it. I'm just wondering, has your country taken any preparation, any investments, any discussions with the European Union about what you can do now to prepare for the climate change that we all understand is coming?
All right. Yes. I would like to invite maybe... That's not his field, but... Yes. If you can... There are some, but I don't think any one of the committees that are here are from the environmental committee, if I'm not mistaken. Yes.
Put you right on the spot.
For a short period of time, the chairman, if I'm not mistaken, of the environmental committee.
Yes. Yes, but I'm not involved with the
government operations
as such. I'm with the committee, parliamentary committee on policies that the minister actually passes on to us to actually discuss, so that they actually don't go to the plenary. So the remit of our committee is very, very limited. I was very interested in what you were saying about the Prince Edward.
Yes, University of Prince Edward. Yes.
Okay, you come from the island.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
because I come from Gozo. mm-hmm. which is the other island. Mm-hmm. And I read a lot about the bridge issue and Gottfried Baldacchino's contribution. Mm-hmm. And because at the moment we're planning, we're working on the possibility of having a permanent link between the islands. Mm-hmm. So we had actually got to Baldacchino to actually give us some presentations on his work and compare and contrast with mm-hmm. with what we want to do. So we may have a chat afterwards.
And you have to do a site visit because our bridge is, unlike yours, we have terrible winters, of course, and the bridge had to be designed because the ice is coming down. You break up the ice and
we have terrible summers, though.
Like we want to avoid it.
We make like we invite Minister Scicluna to be able to make his intervention.
Okay, just first of all, introduce myself. Before, besides being a minister, I was member of the European Parliament. I was vice chairman of ECON in the previous legislature. And many years before, I did my postgraduate studies in the University of Toronto, where I spent 5 years. So, I think what a Canadian would want to know, I mean, about Malta being here, we are on the periphery of the European Union. So that's why the migration is of course, very interesting to us. We're also Mediterranean, and our neighbors have had problems, economic ones, Greece, Portugal, even though it's not really Mediterranean, but it's southern Spain, Italy, and so on. So our experience in the European Union, being members, but also members of the Eurozone, so we are next to Germany and all the other members of the Eurozone. Our experience in the Euro, of course, after the Euro crisis, was not really a good one. I mean, Europe did worse than the US, for example. We haven't yet reached the peaks, talking generally. It's just because we have applied a very strict German type of consolidation, irrespective of growth of investment. Now we're learning better. We're more talking about growth-friendly consolidation. Also about now investment. Before it was a word, you know, it was prohibited from mentioning. I still remember those years in the European Parliament. So, of course, I mean, the overall performance was very lackluster, and we're still not yet out of the woods with banks, problem with banks, especially in Italy, but also Deutsche Bank and others. In our case, we have done well. We are now passing through a new period of time where there's a lot of interest in Malta because of the instability around us. So the more instability, the more attention is towards Malta. Malta has developed a very sophisticated financial center, with practitioners in the accountancy field and also in the legal, international legal field and also in the IT, whereby we can service any company of any size or sophistication. And with it, parallel with it, also the iGaming industry. It started with one or two companies coming from the UK, betting companies, found it nice, and then there was like a herd instinct over time, where now we have many, many, many companies, or there's a cluster of in the iGaming, which again is spilling over into IT and software making, even filmmaking. We also participate in some of the major blockbusters in Hollywood doing down here, besides the filming industry itself. So this interest in Malta, and of course an influx of migration. Before, at very early stages, it was a big shock for us, and there was a reaction. You can call it racist, I don't know, but people were fearful, just like in the north they're having passing through now. We passed through that. Now it's over. For two reasons, we got used to it, but also because the numbers have stopped coming. I mean, there are much smaller numbers because there is an agreement, a tacit agreement with Italy, that we participate and help them. Our coast guards are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, full-time on picking up refugees and so on. And however, they are, they go to Italy. We only get a very small number. So with hindsight, now they are, I wouldn't say fully integrated, but they are participating in the economic activity of a growing economy. Our labor force has been exasperated in terms of, you know, because the growth was so high that we need intake, just like Canada was in the past. We need workers, and we're having lots of workers from Europe mostly, but also from other countries, and they are contributing and adding to our GDP. So we don't have that crisis which is being faced by other countries in Europe. We're now going one step further, whereby investment from overseas is seeing Malta as a base where they can provide services to the region, to the MENA countries, to the Middle East, mostly in university, tertiary education. There is a Jordanian investment of about 4,000 students when the full university will be built. Also in health services, a Singaporean company is investing in hospitals both in Gozo and in Malta, again, with some attention to Malta, but mostly for overseas patients, just like very successful English schools in Malta, which grew over time, attract Japanese, but all from all over the world. So this service giving to outside as a source, not just tourism, but also to is our new sort of sectors. Another sector is logistics. We have the advantage that we have a harbor very close to the airport, and we have transshipment center, which is very competitive and big, but it's limited and restricted, and it's growing up. So we're having now other inland areas which will be enclosed as a free port, and there will be in the logistics. So these are the growing new sectors in Malta, besides then in the shipping, yachting, ship registration, and so on. Some development which was in the news is about taxation. I think I need to talk about this. Malta has been, like Ireland and Luxembourg, very keen to be competitive, and the UK as well, competitive on taxation. I mean, our first hotels and factories of our manufacturing sectors way back in the 60s and 70s came about because we had a very attractive incentive tax, fiscal incentive package. Now, with the EU, we cannot do that anymore, so it has to be more sophisticated. However, with the new standards, I mean, as there's a big shift in the landscape of how we look at aggressive taxation in countries. Malta, under the aegis of the OECD and the EU, is cooperating in the sense of we're ready to, as far as transparency, we have no problems. We remove bank secrecy way back in the early 90s. And so we have no issue with exchange information. We're in FATCA. We exchange information with because of the savings directive. However, still, and also we have consented to the ATAD, the Anti-Tax Avoidance Directive in the EU. We didn't object. So, however, having said that, we still believe that we're against harmonization of taxation, and we want to maintain our system. Unlike Luxembourg or Ireland, doesn't have any tax rulings being given discriminating between company and other. So we have no issue with that. However, there are things which make it attractive. And however, we're saying that it's a complicated system. It's not the time to explain it here. But the way we treat foreign companies are the same like we treat the Maltese, in the sense that there's no corporation tax, there is a withholding tax of 35%, and then it's refunded according to the status of whoever received the dividends. So a pensioner in Malta will be refunded all the tax back. If you're in 35, you don't get anything back, and so on. So these are the issues we are, the challenges we have. Regarding migration, the feeling in Malta was very disappointed when, because of Dublin II, we were supposed to keep all the people here, and we cannot send them outside Malta, was that, and there was no burden sharing. And we felt that Malta, which has, in the spirit of solidarity, helped so much to give, Malta contributes the highest rate to the bailout fund, the ESM and the EFSF. We give 3.2%, higher than Germany. So as a burden, we give our share. We expected that we would get also some solidarity when it comes to immigration, which we didn't get. So now we're trying to push with other Europeans who are in favor of an overall EU, look at the overall problem and share it accordingly. I know it's not easy because refugees tend to conglomerate where their families are in certain towns, in certain areas, and they want to go wherever they like, not where they are needed, because Europe needs refugees. So it's as you said, it's an ongoing saga, and it will be on top of our presidency agenda. Finally, I finish up with Brexit. Malta wants to be seen, like it's seen with our southern neighbours, as an honest broker. Perhaps before I come to Brexit, I just want to say about the safety and risks in Malta, being so close to Libya. Malta is friendly with all the factions. We don't take sides. In fact, we offer our place where they can mediate and negotiate and try to come to a peaceful solution. We're trying to push. So because the Libyans have so many families and wives and children in Malta, we have the governor of the central bank in Malta, we have their wealth fund being managed from Malta. So they look at Malta as a country where, you know, they'd better not mess up with. Of course, the risks will remain. But this is how we keep the balance in Malta as far as safety is concerned. Regarding Brexit, again, we want to be play the an honest broker. We want the UK to succeed. We don't want the UK to be humiliated. It's a big country. It has contributed a lot. The supply of financial services is unique, and the continent needs it. Now, that's the problem. If we're going to cut an artery or a highway where all these services, they will find other areas. Malta is being approached by a lot of institutions. We're going to have the Bankers Association, the UK, here in Malta in 2 weeks' time. We had Gibraltar. So we're ready to have a win-win situation with the UK, but we know it's very difficult. It's very difficult. It's unfurling on a daily basis. We just hope that it won't be an acrimonious divorce, so to speak, and to the good of all, because we cannot afford, neither in the EU nor in the UK, to have various losses and scaring investment away.
Before I ask Senator Wells and Mr. Davies to speak, I just want to say we have been to many other member states in the last number of years, and it's amazing contrast coming here with an unemployment rate of 2.5%. I think it's incredibly low, and at the risk of provoking the opposition here, obviously your budget was well received. At least reading the media, it was well received. The opposition may think differently, but that's their job.
Normal.
That's their job to do that. clearly Malta is doing well, and you should be congratulated, because I'll tell you, when we've been to Greece or Rome, it's just awful listening to young people who cannot get jobs, and they're coming to Canada, they're coming to Australia, they're coming to the United States because there's no work. So congratulations. But I'll ask Senator Wells for any comments he'd wish to make.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to make a comment. I'll make a couple of comments. One, in particular, regarding the comparison that I made about Newfoundland and Labrador and Malta. Newfoundland and Labrador is Canada's newest province, and it's on the far east coast. You can't get any closer to Europe in North America than Newfoundland, and it's generally seen as not part of the mainstream in Canada. Maybe like Malta in Europe. Sometimes it's easy to be forgotten when you're small and don't have the power that some of your cousins have on the mainland. Newfoundland has been was discovered only about 500 years ago by Europeans, and when I compare the history of Malta, which is 7,000 years ago, we think 500 is a lot in Canada, but now I know it's not a lot. Newfoundland has grown on natural resources, fishery, mining, some forestry, and most recently and successfully oil and gas. So we have the great fortune of being, as all of Canada has great natural resources, Newfoundland and Labrador shares and contributes to that wealth. So that's enough about Newfoundland, and I can say to my constituents that I've covered off their requirements on the international stage. I mentioned earlier, a member of Canada NATO, the NATO Parliamentary Association. There's great concern about, and NATO was mentioned earlier, I think, by the chair, there is, in relation to Brexit, there is great concern about the instability in Europe. Europe is the epicenter, of conflict in the past and any possible conflict in the future. We see, fractures now, obviously with the refugees, supply and control of petrochemicals, supply into Europe, obviously Brexit. We think NATO is one of the greatest unions that Canada is part of, and it's necessary for stability in Europe to maintain that strength. And that's very important to us. I know that Malta is not part of NATO, but you're part of a partnership with NATO countries. So I did want to make that comment. It's very important, and we see instability growing, and it doesn't benefit Europe to any degree. And that's of I would say grave concern, on top of the other instabilities that are happening in the world today.
Mr. Davies.
Well, thank you. My connection to Malta and Canada is my barber is Maltese, but any issues with my hair are exclusively my own, I have to say. Two questions or comments arise out of the Minister of Finance's comments that Canada has struggled with low growth, sustained low growth for some time. We've had an entrenched trade deficit for some time, and we, in my opinion anyway, have had decades-long over-reliance on raw resources. And coming to Malta, I see a country with very few resources, but one of the highest growth rates in Europe, a very strong economy, like it's been mentioned, an unbelievably low unemployment rate. And yet you still are finding money in Malta to attack social exclusion, which is an extremely enviable economic record. I know your credit rating was just recently raised as well by Standard & Poor's. So my first question is, to what do you, and I think you've touched on this, Minister, but to what you attribute that outstanding economic performance? You're clearly doing some things very, very well. And my second question is, a personal observation of mine is that behind every mass migration is some form of large-scale natural calamity or conflict. And, as you pointed out, Minister, Malta, rather unique in the world, not exclusively, but quite rarely has adopted a policy of neutrality and played a very important historical role. I know that it was Gorbachev and Reagan were met in Malta. So it seems to me that I'm curious to know what the state of play is, if any, in Europe or as part of Malta's ascension to the presidency of the EU, if there's any thought in Europe to start confronting the root causes of the mass migrations and to put more effort there instead of dealing with the consequences, which clearly seem almost overwhelming. I mean, we have millions of people seeking to move, and it would seem to me that at some point we should start thinking of how we can maybe try to improve circumstances in the places where these people are coming from as a smarter way to maybe attack the causes. I'm just wondering if that's on anybody's mind in Malta. Thank you.
I think we were elected in March of 2013, so it's not too long ago. I think our first concern was stability and continuity, even though, unlike what Greece did, when they were elected, they just toppled over and so on. We said, whether we agree or not with the previous government policy, the budget had to be prepared. And there was no time to have another one, and we accepted it and legislated it and approved it. We also took a promise which the previous government did of cutting taxation, income taxation, and we turned it into, with other, this is the labor reform we had in mind, is instead of just a measure of cutting taxation, which is popular, we said taxation, income tax is a tax on work. And we will shift it gradually, slowly, to consumption taxes, especially environmental taxes. So we did an enormous number of measures to make work pay. That was the first, or at least the second budget, which was our own, making work pay. So our weakness was turned into a strength because we had the lowest female participation in the European Union. And therefore, there was a reserve of labor, and still is. We're still low, but we have made big jumps of 4 percentage points in 2 years, whereby we provided, and it's an expensive, but we thought it is a good investment, still believe it is, free childcare. That was keeping women from the labor force. So provided free childcare, private, and the government pays so much per hour for that. We gave, and there were some tax incentives, but we added to them for all categories to get them out and into the... we also gave a very generous in-work benefit for each child if the woman were to go out to work. So she would get her income, but added to that, she would also get an addition, an in-work benefit for each child of 1,000 euros each. And... there was also a third measure for women, I'm trying to recall, that would help women to go out to work. All in all, this really started. We also had other things which we believed needed kick-starting. We gave... exemption from duty on the first of homeowners on the first, stamp duty was for the first 150,000 euros. And that also added to kickstarting and it started. Then we, the other one was a deal with those dependent on social services. Now, you know, we know many countries, especially on the right, they say, cut them. And immediately go out to work. Well, we didn't do that. We did a deal where a tapering scheme whereby any single parent, for example, or anybody on social assistance or long-term unemployed will, if he were to take up work, then he can keep two-thirds of the benefits the first year, 45% the second year, and 25% the third year. And for small Malta, we've had 3,000, over 3,000, people, either long-term or single-parent on social benefits, who left their dependency and went to work. Other things, you know, of course, I cannot tell all, but these started working. And telling the lower end that we have to create growth before we distribute it. And this was declared. So this was the fourth year, so to speak, whereby we said, look, this was the deal. We look at the upper middle class and those who really work, the entrepreneurial, and we're very generous with them to get the economy going. And then, obviously, now is the time to look at each strata. Even though the in-work and all the taperings on were studied in such a way that they were distributive in themselves, but not as strong as in this budget. whereby we have removed taxation on pensions up to 13,000, increased carrier allowance, and so on. But still made them in such a way that we will not remove the incentive to work. In other words, those that's still strong, because that's the problem, that the dependency gets in when it doesn't pay to work, as simple as that. And it's the government's fault, not the people. People are rational. If they don't want to work, it's because it's in their interest not to work. So we have to change, the government has to change the system to encourage them to work. Regarding the sub-Saharan desert, I think the migration from that area, Africa, I mean, this is what we're talking about. I mean, the more countries you visit, you'll find that the EU is very, very generous with giving them aid, but of the wrong kind. They finish up in governments, and as you know, in those kinds of areas, you know where they would finish. Unlike the Chinese, whereby you could see, you know, they point and said, that's Chinese, that's a tunnel, that's a bridge, that's an airport, that's a harbour, that's Chinese. Or you see greenery in a desert, that's Chinese. Because their model is different. Our model, unfortunately, it's of the worst kind. It goes to Uganda, and dictators, and you don't know where they finish. So I agree with you. We need to look again at development aid. Sometimes you feel so many competing with each other's, wherever Congo or Sudan. You know, it's ridiculous the way we dispense with aid. I mean, that's what we should be doing, because that would then take care of at least lessening the outflow, because people have no future. They are ready to risk their lives. They're dying. They're drowning. But they know, and they take the risk. Why? Because it's worse if they stay behind, especially if they are young people.
I don't know if any of the other fellow members of Parliament, maybe from the opposition, would like to say something. Honourable Tony Fenech.
First of all, thank you for visiting us. It's indeed a pleasure for us to be here. We're also very conciliatory when we meet foreigners, so clearly I will not diverge from, I think, the main line of discussion. Yes, Malta has done well, I think, along the years, and I think one of the primary factors is that when we came to the economy, really, the two parties don't really have big divergent views, and I think we've been consistent in most areas, supportive to each other, because we always believe that, in essence, we'd like to be in government, but for other reasons. We need to have a good, sound economy, because at the end of the day, that is what gives us sustainability for the future. So I think the government can attest to a lot of policies, particularly incentives we've given to industries, financial service industry. There has been a lot of collaboration and a lot of work done even by the previous government, I must say. But we are today bearing the fruits also of that. And I think that is a model Malta should continue to retaining, and we hope to see continue to retaining. Obviously, you've touched upon some very interesting issues. Today I cover foreign affairs rather than I cover finance, so I will talk more from that perspective. But clearly I agree that a big concern with the issue of migration is the issue of resolving the issue at its source, rather than trying to resolve the issue when you're faced with the challenge of having people at your shore. I am a bit critical, obviously, of how the world really tries to address all this, because I think the way the world addresses, and I think the Honourable Minister of Finance actually did allude to it, the way we address aid in Europe and Western and its culture when it looks at Africa particularly, I don't think really it's aid. I think it's really giving money to try and create jobs in your country, rather than really seeing what really Africa needs and really making sure that the aid is helping their development more than your development for giving that aid. And I think that is a concept which radically needs to change. The second aspect, I'm also chairman of the Commonwealth Association for Public Accounts Committee, so I've had also opportunity to be there even recently, you know, in their debate as to how they see development aid, how they see the issues that we talk about, of how they want to solve their problems in terms of the economy. And Well, unless we face the reality of the big issue in Africa that Western countries need to resolve is the issue of corruption in Africa, clearly. From two levels. From the levels of the development aid itself and the results it achieves and who is really being the beneficiary. And the second aspect is that actually Africa is the richest continent in the world. Why is it the poorest? Because clearly, obviously, there are interests of big international corporates not to share the benefits of what they're gaining from the resources of Africa with Africa, but rather sharing the benefits simply with the shareholders on the listing of their exchanges. And I think the world really has to seriously think about the way we're treating Africa and the fairness. I don't think I'm going to solve the problem myself with my intervention, but unless we really look at the issue from its core and be honest with ourselves in the way we're treating with Africa, we're not going to see an end to the migration issue, because at the end of the day, every person in the world has a right to aspire to have a future. And these people, if they can't have a future in Africa, they will go elsewhere. And so we will find them in our shores.
Thank you very much. Ask if there is someone else from our side who would like to contribute. Well, I thank you very much for crossing the Atlantic and to come to visit Malta. Now it's your turn to take some Maltese food for your son-in-law.
I will, but I get it back home too.
It was a pleasure having you here, and I hope that this meeting was mutually fruitful. We'll hope we'll be able to see you again, not just on a business trip as members of parliament, but maybe you would choose Malta as your next destination for your holidays, so we continue to boost our economy. Thank you very much.